710 ESPN presents The Sliwa Show.
How good is the NBA right now? It surpassed my expectations.
The NBA bubble in Orlando has taken over the summer of 2020.
The quality of play, I feel like, is there. The competition is outstanding. It's better than I envisioned it was going to be. Who would have thought we were going to pay this much attention to the teams that are fighting for the final spot of the playoffs? But we are.
The Lakers have wrapped up their final seeding game of the NBA restart. And now, the purple and gold gear up for playoff basketball and championship number 17.
You know, all the stuff over the years that the Laker Nation's been through, what we've been through this season, to clinch number one in the West means a lot to us, but we know we're not finished. That's just one of the milestones of many to get to where we want to be.
The Sliwa Show is on the air. On the air.
Here's Alan Sliwa.
Are you worried about the Portland Trailblazers? Laker fans, are you worried about the Portland Trailblazers? 877-710-ESPN. Should you be worried about the Blazers if you're a Los Angeles Laker fan? Because there's a great likelihood you're going to face the Blazers in the first round. Portland 80-72. They're up on the Brooklyn Nets. 10 minutes left in the third quarter. I want to get Laker fans' thoughts, so if you want to be a part of the show, just simple as this. And by the way, no right or wrong answer. If you're a Laker fan out there and you think, you know what, yes, Portland's playing good basketball, but in a seven-game set, we'll be fine. Yes, Damian Lillard is as amazing as he is, averaging 56 points a game in his last two games and has had an unbelievable run in the Orlando bubble. But when it's all said and done, LeBron James and Anthony Davis are on one side, Damian Lillard, I guess you can say sort of healthy C.J. McCollum and role players are on the other side. 877-710-ESPN. I'll tell you what Stephen A. Smith says. Stephen A. Smith says the Lakers should be scared of Portland.
Hell yes, they should. They have a lot to be concerned about when it comes to the Portland Trailblazers, and mainly because of what we witnessed last night. See, these are the kind of things that Damian Lillard is capable of doing on any given night. Now, the brother's averaging 29 for the season, okay? This brother's all world. I thought he was first team All-NBA last year, and that he deserved strong consideration for that, because Steph Curry had missed some time. We all know that Steph Curry is the greatest shooter in the world, okay? But when you talk about a point guard with shot-making ability, Damian Lillard is the one dude that can challenge him to some degree. He's just sensational, particularly when he gets hot. He's got tremendous poise. He ain't scared of anything. His range is off the charts, and he's got a lot of heart. And he just said, y'all must have forgot who the hell I am.
All right, that's Stephen A. Smith saying that the Lakers should have some concerns against the Portland Trailblazers. So earlier today, I was doing the pregame show. We got double duty today. We started a pregame show at 9 a.m. this morning. And, I always do the pregame show with Michael. And Michael Thompson and I were talking about Portland, and he said something that just kind of opened up my eyes a little bit. We were talking about Portland, and, Michael, they're incredibly good. They're hot right now. They're playing good basketball. Damian Lillard's been amazing, but we're not losing in a seven-game set to the Portland Trailblazers. I've been telling Kirk for the last week or so. I'm like, Kirk, we got it. Lakers in six. And Michael said that he said he expects the Lakers to win, and he expects the Lakers to, you know, obviously handle business against the Blazers if it's them in the first round. I know I'm making a lot of assumptions here because we don't know if it's Portland yet. But they are up 8 right now in the third quarter against the Brooklyn Nets. And Michael said that, you know what, it wouldn't be the biggest shocker in the world if the Lakers did lose to the Blazers. It wouldn't be the biggest shocker in the world if the Lakers did lose to the Blazers. Now, that threw me off a little bit. I wasn't expecting to hear that from Michael Thompson. Now, the Lakers have played the Portland Trailblazers 3 times this year. Back in December, they won 136-113. That was at Portland. Another game late in December at Portland, they won 128-120. And they have one loss. This was coming off. This is the first game, if you guys remember. The Laker game was canceled. It was postponed against the Clippers on February 28th. That was 2 days after the tragic passing of the great Kobe Bryant. And Portland was the first game for the Lakers. Lakers lost that game 127-119. And I think that was a game where Damian Lillard, I believe, went off on the box score. Let me look real quick. He had 48 points and 10 assists for Dame Lillard. So that's one of those games that's very bubble-esque of what he's accomplishing right now in the bubble. But I give a little bit of a preview to all that because I'm not denying that the Portland Trailblazers aren't a good team. I'm not denying that they're healthy. They're hot at the right time. I thought Ramona brought something up a little bit earlier. They are using so much of their energy right now just to get into the playoffs. No, let me scratch that. Just to get into the play-in tournament that they would have to win, then they'd have to turn around and play the Los Angeles Lakers in the playoffs. So I get the hype around the Portland Trailblazers. I do. I genuinely do. I understand why people are hyped about what they've accomplished and what they're doing in this bubble. But when I feel like I have to remind people a little bit that what they've accomplished, they've had some close games against teams that shouldn't be close. They shouldn't have close games against. And I know that can happen on any given night in the NBA, but let me give some examples here. They won against Memphis in overtime to start off the bubble. So a Memphis team that only has two wins, they had to take them all the way to overtime, two wins in the bubble. They're 2-6, and they're actually going to be in this play-in tournament. They had a close matchup against. Then they lost to the Boston Celtics by 4. Boston, you know, certainly being a team that could compete in the Eastern Conference, but I just want to emphasize they obviously lost that game. Then they lost a couple games later. They lost to the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, without Patrick Beverley. They took Paul George out, and they took Marcus Morris out at the end of the game. Of course, we all remember that game now because Damian Lillard missed those two free throws. Then they barely squeaked and won beat a Philadelphia 76ers team 124-121 who did not have Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid left the game and didn't come back. So why do I say all of this? I'm not saying that I'm not impressed with the Portland Trailblazers. You should be. Everybody should be. It's incredibly impressive what they've put together. But can we please stop talking about the Portland Trailblazers as if they're the best team in the NBA and they're unstoppable and unbeatable? I mean, how quick? We're prisoners of the moment. I am too. You know, this happens to me as well. I say it in the postgame show a lot. Lakers win two games in a row, and I'm already talking about, well, where's the parade going to be when they win two games in a row? They lose two games, and all of a sudden we think that, you know, the world's going to end. The Portland Trailblazers have been nice this year. Portland Trailblazers have been, they're healthy for the first time. They're playing good basketball. Damian Lillard's been amazing. But they're still a Western Conference team that's going to be looking up at the Lakers because last I checked, you got two superstars on the Lakers and you got one superstar on the Portland Trailblazers. Another thing Portland doesn't do, they play no defense at all. Okay, when we come back, I want to spend some time and I got a couple clips that I want to play. Markieff Morris yesterday was with the media, and I got a chance to just kind of propose this question to him. Can it be a good thing? Can it be a positive thing that the Lakers take on the Portland Trailblazers in the first round? Basically, what I was trying to say indirectly is, will everyone wake up on the Lakers if you know you're playing a Portland Trailblazers team? So we'll get into that. I have a couple score updates that I want to get into. Should I save them for after the break, or should I give them right now? Should I give the Blazers score? You know what? I'm not teasing anything. 84-82, Blazers with a two-point lead on the Brooklyn Nets. So we still got a game there. There's no even lock that it's going to be the Portland Trailblazers. And with the Dodgers and the San Diego Padres, Dodgers can't stop scoring. They're in the bottom of the fourth. Mookie Betts just hit a home run, a solo shot. The Dodgers are up 9-2 on the San Diego Padres. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The Sliwa Show continues on 710 ESPN. More Sliwa right now.
Kings are going to dribble out the clock, and the Lakers are going to finish the bubble seeding games with a record of 3-5. The record isn't important. What is they clinch the number one overall seed. So it's a final in Orlando. The Kings win it, 136-122. And next up for the Lakers, playoffs. Round one, the Lakers will play the winner of the play-in tournament. We think it's going to be Portland, but it could possibly be Portland, Memphis, Dallas, or San Antonio.
All right, that's John Ireland on the call earlier today with Michael Thompson. So we do have an update on that front. Take the Spurs out of the mix. The Portland Trailblazers will determine how this play-in tournament's going to go. So they just have a two-point lead over Brooklyn, 84, 85, 82 now, about halfway through the third quarter. So it's still not a lock. By the time this show is done tonight at 9, we should know who's going to be in that play-in tournament. Yesterday, Markieff Morris. You know, Markieff Morris, I, for those who know, who follow me on the Lakers front, I know there's a lot that know that how much I thought Markieff Morris at the buyout market was going to be a key piece, and specifically against the Clippers. I won't rant about it right now. When we get closer playing the Clippers, we can figure that out. But Markieff Morris, you know, we don't hear from too often. It's not like he's talking, you know, after every game, and there's such a curiosity to hear from guys like LeBron and Anthony Davis and Kyle Kuzma. Those are typically the players that we hear from. So Markieff, yesterday we got a chance to talk to him, and there was a conversation coming up about, you know, the play-in tournament and the 8 and the 9 seed and all that stuff. All that stuff was coming up. So with all that being said, I'll just kind of set up my question here. I'll play the clip, which actually has a question in it. And this is specifically on if the Lakers are facing the Portland Trailblazers.
Hey, Markieff, just to stay on that for a second, if it is hypothetically Portland in the first round, they're playing really well. Damian Lillard obviously playing as good as anybody in the bubble. How could that be a benefit to take on a team that's kind of clicking early on and to have that type of a matchup right out the gate?
They have been playing well. I think for us, that's good because it's going to make us play to the level of competition, to the top level. I think by having that first round opponent, that's going to be tough preparing us for the playoffs. I think we need that early on. Not to say that, you know, against those other teams, it wouldn't be as hard, but playing against a team that really got it going and a player that's obviously playing the best, that's been the best player in the bubble, is going to, you know, it's going to be a good matchup, and it's going to be good for us to, you know, to play them first round and play hard and try to get to the second round.
That's Markieff Morris right there. I think there's something to that. I really do. And when I say that, yes, there's an excitement level of you got all these stars going up against each other in the first round. It's good for TV, like I've mentioned. But let's put all that aside for a second, and let's just talk Lakers basketball. If we're just talking Lakers, they haven't been – we haven't seen them in this bubble where you're sitting back and you're super excited and you're saying, man, this team is so good. Look how stacked the Lakers were running through teams. Bobby Marks actually made me feel a little bit better when – you ask Bobby Marks, who's covering the NBA, he's NBA front office insider. He's been with front offices before. He knows what the Lakers are with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. He's not too worried about the late show, but I think it could wake him up a little bit. I think this could be one of those, you know, you throw water on somebody's face and all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's get going here. And if Lakers by Sunday know that they're playing the Portland Trailblazers, it will wake them up. I don't think they're going to treat the series against the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't think they would treat it the way I definitely don't think they would treat it the way they would treat the Portland Trailblazers if it was the Blazers. Okay, quick update here. The Brooklyn Nets, 89-85 over the Portland Trailblazers. They have a four-point lead with 4.5 minutes left to go in the third quarter, and Brooklyn has the ball. All right, let's go out to the phone lines. Let me see here. Manuel. Let's get Manuel in here. Manuel, appreciate you calling in, bud. What's going on?
Hey, Slee Stack, you know you're my man, so got to call you, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you for calling in.
You've done a great job these last few months, man, carrying the torch for Los Angeles Lakers basketball talk, for pop culture in this time slot, hardcore hip-hop and sports fans like myself really appreciate what Alan Sliwa, a.k.a. the Slee Stack, Slee making stacks for giving all the facts what he brought to the table. So I just want you to take a bow, sir, tip your cap, and a tip of the cap to you because you're first class, Sliwa, and you know I'll be calling you on all these Laker talks.
Appreciate it, Manuel. Thank you, man. Thank you for calling in. Very nice of Manuel to call in. You know, it's kind of weird. Let's get real for a quick second here. You know, 6 months, I got a chance to do this Sliwa show. And, you know, the circumstances, it was supposed to be a show that's on maybe 1 to 2 days a week just based upon we got to carry so many games. I'm already doing all the Laker games for post-game, for pre-game. I have Lakers talk every Monday night. So it wasn't supposed to be a 5 days a week thing. Time slots earlier in the day, those are going to be on 5 days a week. And I got the opportunity to do this, obviously, for the last 6 months. What I did not know is, like everybody else, we were going to run into where sports stopped. And, you know, 5 months, you're basically talking sports without sports. So for me, it's been an incredible, incredible, incredible learning experience that, you know, I can't appreciate more. And, you know, I've got this kind of opportunity to get to know some of the listeners. When I say get to know, just maybe it's on Twitter or maybe callers that call in. And I can't tell you how much that means to me. That's all I really care about. If listeners like what I'm trying to put together or the style of my show, that's all I care about. After that, it is what it is. So after tonight, we'll just get back to doing just Lakers programming. So we'll continue to do Lakers talk. We'll continue to do the pre- and post-game show. So I appreciate that call from Manuel and Gardena. 94-89, it's Brooklyn over Portland. So I want to go, actually, I got one more here I want to play from Kyle Kuzma. So Kuz yesterday was also a part of Shoot Around, and another question I got to ask Kuz was what that initial experience is going to be for him. You know, let's not forget this. When LeBron says he's got to be the third best player on this Lakers team, let's also not forget how many playoff games Kyle Kuzma has had in his career. You know how many he's had? None. So it's going to be an interesting playoff run for Kyle Kuzma. I don't know what to expect. I really don't. Kuz has never been in this before. Here's Kuzma from yesterday.
Obviously, only just a game away for the first time that you'll get an opportunity to play in the postseason. What are some of your expectations going into the postseason? How excited are you just to get that opportunity to obviously be playing for something as big as a championship?
I'm excited. You know, my first 2 years in the league, we didn't get to the playoffs, and I'm really excited because playoffs kind of show you what you're made of. You know, you see the difference between guys that, you know, actually love the game of basketball and who love lifestyle. So I think the ultra competitiveness in me and, you know, the rest of my teammates, it's going to be fun to be out there and play.
Well, you better love basketball if you're inside this Orlando bubble because, you know, it's like nothing that they've ever had before. It's like nothing anybody's ever experienced before. And it's a bubble. You can't get out. And it's a resort. I don't want to make it sound like it's a prison or anything like that, you know. But what I'm referring to there is it's not on their own rules. They don't get to just go to a game and then afterwards at Staples Center, they get in their car and they go about living their life. So Kuzma has talked about this, how all he cares about is basketball, so this is good for him. He enjoys it. And it's also probably different for Kuz than it would be for LeBron, who's got three kids at home and a wife and everything else. So I'm sure there's a number of circumstances around that. Got to switch gears here. Heather Dinich, who covers college football for ESPN. So there's a lot of news around college football right now. We heard a little bit earlier today, and Heather Dinich, if you guys don't know her, just tune in to go watch SportsCenter at any point this past week, and you're going to see Heather all over SportsCenter, and that's simply because she just has been right there on the college football front. I got a chance to talk to her a couple months ago, and when we chatted, there was a lot of conversation. Things were starting to heat up about college football. Now, obviously, this week with the Pac-12 saying that they're going to postpone their season, Big Ten is going to do the same thing, and you got the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC saying, nope, we're going to run business as usual. So I got a ton of questions for Heather Dinich, and really I'm looking for a lot of clarification as well. I think there's a lot of question marks when it comes to college football, especially it was announced earlier today that NCAA President Mark Emmert Said that there won't be fall NCAA championships because there's not enough schools participating because of the coronavirus pandemic. So we're going to cover everything college football. I'll ask her as many Pac-12 questions as I possibly can for those who are obviously UCLA fans or USC fans or alumni or whatever the case is. Heather Dinich coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Sliwa Show is on.
Bro.
And we're going till 9 p.m. tonight.
How good is that? I mean.
Now, back to Sliwa.
Them fight to fears for your love, only Paman serve years. Babylon Sodopi.
All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. I want to welcome in Heather Dinich, covers college football for ESPN. Heather, I think every time I turn on ESPN these days, I see you there. You're
every
taking no time off.
News, man. It's a different story every time I turn around.
All right, well, how about we start here? There's some things that, you know, obviously have gone down college football-wise in the last couple of days that I want to go back to, but what is the latest? I know we've kind of sat here over the last couple of days. We see some conferences saying we got to move this thing past 2020. Other conferences look like they're holding firm. What is the latest in college football?
Well, the latest is that the Big 12, ACC, and SEC continue to try to move forward and play college football in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, while the Big 10 and the Pac-12 have said we have to put on the brakes and we're going to push it to the spring. And what I've been told from multiple people in every conference is that they are all making their own individualized decisions based on the advice of their medical advisors. And a lot of people seem to be confused about why it's safe to play in three Power Five conferences but deemed unsafe in the other two. And the answer that I've received, including from medical experts, is that it's because the coronavirus is impacting different places in different ways.
Man, that's that I think just adds 50 more questions that I won't list down for you. For the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, can you just talk to us about the timing? Why now? Was there part of the thought process from those two conferences? Did they think they can kick the down? Did they think they could kick the can down the road just a little bit longer? Or no, they felt like they were out of time.
Yeah, well, they didn't feel like there was any point. And I think it's important to note somewhat of a difference between those two decisions. The Big Ten was essentially making a decision based on their medical advisors about an abundance of caution and about a fear of the unknowns of the long-term impacts that the coronavirus might have, not just on the heart and myocarditis, but just in general, the unknowns of how it can impact the student-athletes down the road. Whereas when you look at the Pac-12, and as you well know, based on where you are,
sure.
It's a different situation in California. And their medical advisors were saying, look, from campus to campus in the Pac-12, it's different in terms of testing availability, testing turnaround time, and there was a grave concern about the positivity rates throughout the geographic footprint of the Pac-12. You know, you look at Arizona, you look at Southern California, and it's still a major issue there, and they deemed it unsafe to play team sports. So that's where those two decisions came from, and it wasn't like postponing it until September 26th in their eyes was going to necessarily change their minds about how dangerous it could be.
Heather Dinich covers college football for ESPN, joining the Sliwa Show. Heather, so just to stay on that for a quick second, the thought process is they'll play in 2021. I guess from a mindset perspective, are they confident that that goal will be met? I mean, maybe you could just kind of explain to us what happens in 2021, at least early on, right, where do they think there's going to be an incredible amount of changes? They are much more confident on a vaccine. I'm just trying to figure out balancing what happens in 4 months or so.
Well, I think there is a hope. I don't know if I would go so far as to say confidence, but I think there's a hope and some indicators that there could be a much better testing scenario at that point, not only just in terms of availability and turnaround time, but also cost. And, you know, there's also hope that there could be a vaccine by then. But the reason that going into all this months ago that spring was a last resort was because the fact of the matter is everyone will tell you nobody knows if the virus is going to be any better in March, April, and May than it might be in September, October, November. So that is certainly still a concern. There's certainly still a concession amongst all of the leaders in college athletics that spring might not happen. But they're putting it out there. They're trying to give their student athletes and their coaches some hope. And now they've got to start working on a plan for it because nobody, quite frankly, as of this week, really has it on paper besides Purdue coach Jeff Brohm as to what this might look like.
Heather, what has been the, and I guess more from the public perspective, how are people taking the news on college football? Do you feel there's a ton of support towards the Pac-12 and the Big Ten decisions, or do you think there's more criticism towards there, or do you think it's 50-50? I mean, how is this being looked at from a public eye?
I think it's being viewed the same way many other things are in our country at this time, where you have people agreeing that, hey, this is the right move, protect the student-athletes, and there are other people who are saying, I don't understand why they're not safe playing football, but they can go to chem class and sit next to 50 students who may have been who knows where last night. So I think there are a lot of valid questions, a lot of concerns, but I do think that there's also a fair amount of people who understand that the conference commissioners they're all really trying really hard to make the best decisions that they believe are in the best interest of the student athletes. And, you know, as Kevin Warren in the Big Ten pointed out to me, just to kind of emphasize how much they do care about the student athletes, he said, this is going to be an enormous financial hit for us. But that's not, you know, why we did or didn't make the decision. We made it, to protect the student athletes in spite of that.
Heather Dinich, who covers college football for ESPN. If you turned on ESPN the last couple of days, you saw a lot of Heather Dinich. Heather, everyone has talked about how college football how they would be better off if they had one leader. It sounds great in theory. We know how much power, obviously, all these conferences have. Do you see that happening in the foreseeable future? Do you see that there's one person leading the way specifically for college football, or is that going to be too tough to execute?
The only way that that would happen is if the Power Five conferences completely break away from the NCAA and establish their own organization, because NCAA President Mark Emmert has told me, and he said again tonight on his Twitter, on the NCAA's Twitter feed, he said, I will quote it to you right now, I get that people want simple answers. I get that it's frustrating that some conferences are playing and some aren't right now. That's just the way it has to be to do this inside college sports. It's not right or wrong or better or worse. And then he said, when people say, well, if we just had a czar to come in and say, we're going to make a decision, that'll be it. History, if it's taught us anything, people love the concept of a czar, but they hate czars. So
point.
His point repeatedly to me is that that's just not how it works on college campuses, because each university, not even just a conference, each university and campus has to make its own decisions.
So just staying with this for a quick second, has there been any chatter of these Power Five conferences deciding, you know what, let's go off, let's branch off on our own? I mean, is that even possible?
It's probably possible. I don't think the commissioners are actually talking about it. I think it's more just speculation and chatter around college football and the media and fans because of the way things are operating now, and that is fractured. And I do think that that is also a microcosm, again, of what we're seeing nationally. And some of that has to do, again, with the pandemic impacting different places in different ways. But I think it's more chatter than it is reality at this point.
So, Heather, what are the chances then that these other conferences go through and play this fall, the ACC, SEC, and Big 12, is there a strong likelihood that this is going to happen? Or, you're kind of listening to coaches and different athletic directors from the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, some of them in favor, some of them criticizing. How about the conferences that have pretty much said, no, we're going to try and go through on this? Do people feel good that this is going to happen and come September, all these games will eventually line up?
I don't think anyone is confident in very much right now, except for their protocols that they have in place. I mean, the Big 12 is instituting testing 3 times a week, not just for college football, for all of its student athletes, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. And if somebody does test positive, they're going to get an EKG, they're going to get an echocardiogram, they're going to go through a swath of tests to make sure that their hearts are okay and there aren't underlying conditions. So the one thing I believe that those conferences proceeding forward are confident in are what they have set in place to protect the student athletes. Where the confidence wavers is how that continues to be effective when 50,000 other college students join the athletes and college just starts. Nobody knows how that's going to impact or change the tests or change the positives, and that's what we're going to start to see here very soon. But what those conferences wanted was to wait to see how it impacted them.
You know, Heather, we've been doing daily shows here since the since everything started, COVID-19 back in March, where NBA was the first one to kind of stop, and everything went from there. And I feel like I'm almost kind of going back in time, because a lot of the conversations that we're having right now, as, maybe confusing is not the right word, but there's so many moving parts. And we had that with basketball. We had that for baseball. And now I feel like, you know, on the football perspective, it's not that these conversations weren't had before, but to see some dominoes fall, I'm sure it's raising, you know, a ton of questions for a lot of fans out there. I just got a couple more here for you. If I guess this is the one thing that I haven't fully understood. Can a school from the Pac-12 or the Big Ten, if they want to play this fall, do they have options to leave their conference and still continue to play?
Well, technically, they can try. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what Mark Emmert said about that as well tonight. He said that the NCAA has no authority to tell anybody if they can or can't play college football. Mm-hmm. He said this. We don't have the authority to say to a school, yeah, okay, we know that your conference isn't playing and you want to go ahead and play over here. I may think that's a silly idea, but it's not up to me. It's not up to anybody. That school has its own authority to do that. Now its conference colleagues can say, you know, if you do that, we're going to go throw you out of the conference. Mm. That's fine. But they can still do what they want there. He said that's never been the prerogative of the NCAA, and in my opinion, it never should be. So he's saying it's on the campuses, but they're going to have to deal with the consequences. And I'm sure that there's a lot of legal ramifications if they're going to try and do that as well.
Last one here for you. Heather Dinich, who covers college football for ESPN, has been all over this, really just all these stories from a college football perspective, but specifically right now. If a student athlete wants to transfer, how much of a challenge would that be if a student athlete decides, okay, well, I'm in the Pac-12 now and I don't have the ability to play until potentially next year. I want to play now. Does that just raise concerns of what schools have scholarships available and so forth? I mean, is it complicated or is it something that can be done?
Well, as of right this second, I mean, literally right now, the transfer rules remain the same. So if you want to do that, you hop in the transfer portal, and then if somebody picks you up, you have to sit a year.
That's
you have
right,
to wait
Richard. Mm-hmm.
To be able to play. Now, they're going to look at those things, but look, as a parent, if I'm given advice, I would say hold that thought a minute, because you might transfer into one of those three conferences and on September 25th, they don't play.
Right.
So, yeah, and the eligibility thing is, you know, you're not going to lose your scholarship or year of eligibility if you're in one of those conferences. So you have the opportunity to continue to use the facilities, continue to take advantage of everything that's on campus, go to class, and then come back if you want to when it's full go.
Well, Heather, I know it's a lot to wrap our heads around. Look, for Los Angeles just specifically, obviously with UCLA, and with USC, two great college football programs, great just alumni bases. Actually, you could throw basketball in the mix there too, just because of fall sports. But with all that being said, and to just kind of offer some kind of shed some kind of light on what's going on, I know here in LA we greatly appreciate it, and of course all the work that you do on ESPN.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Stay safe out there.
All right, great stuff from Heather Dinich as always. Okay, I got some updates here. Got an update on the Brooklyn Nets Portland Trailblazers game. Got an update on the Los Angeles Dodgers San Diego Padres game. All that coming up next. And let's take a look at these standings here. Not the standings, but the schedule that came out for the NBA in the West and the East. We know when the Lakers are playing. We know all the matchups in the Western Conference, except for the Lakers, who they'll play. So all that coming up next. Plus, I'll take some of your guys' phone calls. I know we got a few guys waiting on hold. We'll do all that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. More Sliwa right now.
The date we deport them, can't keep up to the trends, we report them. If one of the muggling type, we not court them. But if the big beauty queen, we support them again. If a woman not up to date, we deport them.
All right, I got some updates here. What a game in Orlando right now between the Portland Trailblazers and the Brooklyn Nets. If you wanted this regular season to end in some drama, you're getting it right now. It's the Brooklyn Nets with a 2-point lead over the Portland Trailblazers. 7 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, 116 to 114. If you're looking for defense, do not tune into this game. Do not tune into any of these Portland Trailblazers games so far. No defense being played at all, but incredibly, incredibly entertaining. So that's what we got going on right now, 116 to 114. I really think the timing of this game and the show ending is probably going to collide, so I'll keep you guys posted on this. If the Portland Trailblazers win tonight, they will be the eighth seed, and they will take on the Memphis Grizzlies this Saturday, needing one game to face the Los Angeles Lakers. If Brooklyn upsets the Portland Trailblazers, Memphis will be the eighth seed. Phoenix, who went 8-0 in this Orlando bubble, would need to win two games in a row to then go face the Lakers on Tuesday. Let me sneak in a quick call here. By the way, if you want to be a part of the show, it's 877-710-ESPN. And before I go to the phone lines, it's 11-2, by the way, Dodgers. So they are taking care of business. Alden Gonzalez covers baseball for ESPN, comes up at 8:30. Jeremy and Pico Rivera. Jeremy, thank you for taking some time and joining the show. Go ahead, bud.
Hey, Jer. Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Thank you for calling.
I appreciate it. You know, I just wanted to, it's a little bit off subject, but just kind of getting excited with this season. We're looking forward to it, and I think we all miss our sports, so I'm happy it's on, but I'm a little bit down already thinking about that moment when the Lakers win the championship, and we're just going to be watching it, drinking a beer in our living room. You know, it's, I don't know how you feel about that, but I don't know. I'm looking at Dodgers kicking butt, obviously LA team is strong.
No, I get it. I get it. I mean,
like, I don't know what to do. Like, we can't do anything. But yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer. I hope we win it and hope we get to celebrate, man. How do you feel about this?
Well, I'll tell you this, Jeremy. I mean, you know, I think it's a good problem to have. Let's say the Lakers get their 17th NBA championship this year, and we don't have an opportunity to, you don't have a parade, and we don't have an opportunity to hang that banner up. You know, it actually kind of reminds me, think about the Kansas City Chiefs for a second. So Chiefs won a Super Bowl. They're not going to be in Meadowlands, you know, this upcoming September with 75,000 fans and, you know, raising the banner and everything else. Everybody's going to be getting their rings. So I get what you're talking about. And I know, especially for the Lakers and even for the Dodgers, who walked into this season as the World Series favorite to win it all, I understand where you're coming from. I understand your perspective, but I think sometimes this is just the predicament. This is the situation, and we just got to deal with it. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's absolutely nothing we can do, and that's just the predicament that all these guys are in. But I appreciate you calling in, Jeremy. Thank you, man. It's 120 to 117, the Brooklyn Nets have a three-point lead over the Portland Trailblazers, six games left to go. I feel like I'm calling play-by-play. I feel like we've done this for every game so far with the Portland Trailblazers. They've been on these, they've been in these main games, you know, these 6 o'clock games, and because they have, a lot of times I'm doing the show. The last time we did a show, I think it was the Dame Lillard 61-point performance against the Dallas Mavericks. Okay, so for those who are just tuning in right now, let me give everybody just a quick rundown of what the NBA playoff picture looks like. So I'm reading this actually off Mark Spears' Twitter handle here. The Western Conference is set. Yes, the Lakers don't know who they're going to play, but what we do know is Lakers got a game on Tuesday. This upcoming Tuesday will be game one. So playoffs will start on Monday. There were a lot of question marks of when, you know, obviously when these teams are going to play, who's going to play, so forth. And what we do know is that the Lakers, at least for Tuesday, will be game one for the Lake Show. Thursday will be game two. Both of those games will be at 6 o'clock Pacific. So we obviously know that. Game three would be on Saturday. Game four would be a week from this Monday. So that kind of gives you the schedule there. Clippers, which we haven't talked much about the Los Angeles Clippers. I hate this matchup. I feel like the Clippers are just going to absolutely steamroll the Dallas Mavericks. I really do. As great as Luka Doncic is, I do not like the matchup for the Dallas Mavericks. Their first game is this Monday. So Clippers will play Monday, a 6 o'clock tip-off against the Dallas Mavericks, and then they got a game on Wednesday, both of those games at 6 p.m. So obviously you can see how they're doing this. The West Coast teams, they're putting them on the 6 o'clock time slot. But Clippers will play their first game before the Lakers do. So we obviously see that on that front. Denver-Utah is number three versus number six. I don't want to talk too much about that one because it doesn't really have any implications to the Lakers. But the Oklahoma City Thunder versus the Houston Rockets has plenty of implications when it comes to the Los Angeles Lakers. Winner of that that matchup, that 4-5 matchup, plays the Lakers in the second round. So that's when they'll face the Lakers, is in the second round. As I do the show right now, I want to keep you guys posted on the game because this game is just incredible. Incredible game. Everyone just started assuming that the Portland Trailblazers were going to take care of business. And that this game has, you know, in the pregame show earlier today, I'm talking to Michael, and Michael's telling me, I'm like, Michael, you know, if it is, it could be Portland, it could be this. I'm trying to hype up the games today. He's like, basically, what are you trying to hype up? There's nothing to hype up. We know who's going to play in this, be in this bubble tournament, and we know who the Lakers are going to play in the first round. He kept saying Portland. But as it sits right now, Carmelo just hit a huge three. Under 4 minutes left to go, Brooklyn with a two-point lead over the Portland Trailblazers, and it is it's clutch time, I'll tell you that much. So a lot of and it's actually a little surprising too how much this game means to the Portland or to the Brooklyn Nets. Who would have thought that they're playing for their lives right now, but they literally at this moment are playing for their lives. Okay, we'll switch gears. Alden Gonzalez coming up. Dodgers blowing out the San Diego Padres right now. It is 11-2, so Dodgers looking to it's in the bottom of the sixth inning. So we talked about the Dodgers bats, how poorly that they were playing. Dodgers certainly coming off the snide a little bit here and playing much better baseball these last couple of days. Alden Gonzalez coming up next. We'll talk some baseball. We'll talk some Dodgers, and we'll take it from there. Stay right here. Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
The Sliwa Show is on.
Bro.
And we're going till 9 p.m. tonight.
How good is that? I mean,
now, back to Sliwa.
I want to welcome in Alden Gonzalez, multimedia reporter for ESPN, taking some time on a Thursday night to join the Sliwa Show. Alden, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
You know, I'm good. Sitting here in studio, talking sports, I have one TV that's got Dodgers Padres, another TV that's got Portland and Brooklyn in the NBA. It's a lot different than it was a couple months ago. Let's just say that.
Different, but, you know, there's some semblances of normalcy. So that's something to celebrate, right?
Oh, no, and that's kind of what I'm referring to. It's like, it's almost crazy to think that I got these games all going on. And, you know, we got the NBA schedule out earlier today. So it's great to get sports back. And I appreciate your time. And, you know, we could talk a little bit about Dodgers baseball. Are you a big NBA fan, by the way? Are you a big Laker fan? Or what do you have? Do you have an interest in the NBA?
I love the NBA.
Okay.
I was born and raised in Miami.
Okay.
And so I've been a Heat fan like my whole life. I don't follow them as much anymore as
they got a good team. They got a good team. They could be a quiet little threat there in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, just from what I see, like here and there, like they seem like a really like young, scrappy, hungry team. Mm-hmm. I think Jimmy Butler sets a good tone for that team. But I've been spoiled as a Heat fan. I was in Miami when they got Shaq, when Dwayne Wade was coming up. I was there for some of LeBron and Bosh and Wade. And I mean, you know.
Yeah, you were spoiled.
I know this is, you don't want to talk Heat, but.
No, but you were
like
spoiled.
A godsend in Miami.
Yeah, no, you were definitely spoiled. Pat Riley is just, he's the best. He's the godfather. Was amazing for the Lakers. So let me bring that up because before we get into baseball, this game is just amazing right now between Portland and Brooklyn. Portland wins, they're in. They're up 132 to 130. Yusuf Nurkic just got fouled. He's going to the free throw line. Under 2 minutes left to go. So we'll keep listeners updated on that as we go along here. Alden, after tonight's Dodgers game, they'll be, you know what, let's just say that the Dodgers are one-third through the season. They'll have played 20 games. They'll be 13-7. What are some of your, I don't want to be half glass half empty on this, but what are some of your concerns with the Dodgers 20 games in? Are there some things that stand out to you, or do you like exactly where they are right now?
I think they should be happy with where they are, given where we're at throughout the game. I know in recent days there's been a lot said about their offense sort of not being where you'd expect it to be. And, I mean, I know you have the Dodger game on, so you could see that they've gone off tonight.
Sure.
Against Chris Paddock and the Padres bullpen, particularly Mookie Betts was over three times. But, I mean, their offensive struggles before tonight was more reflective of just the entire league. I mean, batting average has been down throughout baseball, and that was a lot of it was to be expected given the quick ramp-up and hitters traditionally falling behind pitchers early on. And you kind of knew with the Dodgers that eventually they were going to get going. First, because of obviously the names in their lineup, but also because of, if you look at just their metrics, right? I think heading into the week, they were bottom five on batting average on balls in play, but they were top five in hard hit percentage. And they were also taking their walks. Hmm. So given that, and who's in their lineup, you figure that eventually they're just going to get going. And, you know, in addition to that, like, they've had some really encouraging signs from their bullpen. I know Joe Kelly's now facing a five-game suspension, but Kenley Jansen, looks like that cutter's kind of rounding back into what, maybe not what it was 3 years ago, but into being a very good pitch for him. Cruzdal Graterol looks amazing. Blake Treinen's look good. Like, their bullpen has some depth. And then with their rotation, like, you know, Walker Buehler still hasn't rounded completely into who he's going to be this year, but he will. And, you know, they still have Kershaw, who's going to have some good and bad starts at this stage in his career, but Dustin May has looked good. Julio Urias has looked pretty good. Even somebody like a Tony Gonsolin, another young kid, came up and threw the ball well for them. And it just sort of speaks to their organizational depth and their talent. It's not perfect right now. If I had to pinpoint maybe one place where I would be concerned, it might be Cody Bellinger. Just where is he at right now? Does he have the right feel in the batter's box? But I mean, he's hit the ball really hard over these last couple of days, so it's hard to find a flaw. You know, the Padres look good. They're an exciting, young, good team. The Rockies have surprised a lot of people, so that division is competitive. But I mean, if you're a Dodgers fan, you got to be pretty happy with where they are, given just sort of the expectations and given that offense has been down throughout the league.
Yeah, that's kind of the case that I was making a little bit earlier today. I said, look, it'd be if they're 7-12. Okay, I get it. You know, you're having conversation like, man, we're almost a third through the season, 33%. That's a different conversation. That's a different story. Well, that hasn't been the case. After today, they'll be 13-7. I think, you know, some of the things that you mentioned, maybe it is almost not a good thing that Bellinger's not playing well, he's not hitting well, but that you're still playing pretty good baseball. Bellinger, you have to just assume eventually he's going to be Cody Bellinger, and you know that average will improve. You talked about Mookie Betts a little bit earlier today as well. He's got 3 home runs, or a little bit earlier in our conversation. Now his average up to 310. But just staying with Bellinger, what do you think it is? Do you start pressing a little bit if you're a batter? If you know that each game is worth almost 3 games, does it kind of get to your head? Why do you think he is struggling? Or do you think, look, he's hitting the ball hard, or he's hitting it right at guys, eventually those are going to fall through?
I think it's a little bit of everything. Dave Roberts was asked today about whether he feels pressure to sort of live up to who he was as an MVP last year, and he admitted that maybe that's probably part of the calculus too. What you mentioned about the 60-game season and games being more magnified, I sort of get that too. The counter to that, though, would be that they expanded the postseason. So, like, almost a lot of teams are going to get in. So it kind of dilutes the pressure of getting off to a good start. Look, he tweaked his mechanics during the shutdown. He was sort of trying to find and hitters operate off feel all the time. And he was just trying to search for a certain feel in the batter's box. And I think part of it might have been that he's trying to search for the feeling that he had when he was the best player in baseball in the first half of 2019. And I think he spent part of the second half of last year searching for that. And he might have spent the shutdown searching for that again. And I don't know if this is the case with Cody Bellinger, but I know that, you know, sometimes as a hitter, you got to guard against maybe over-tinkering to try to sort of find a certain feeling. There are a lot of hitters throughout baseball history, the vast majority of them will never know what Cody Bellinger felt like at the plate and the kind of zone that he was in the first half of 2019, because what he did is not rivaled by many people throughout history. So maybe there's some of that, of just maybe over-tinkering, and that's just my speculation. But I know that he did tweak his mechanics some, and I think he's still sort of searching through that. He's still searching his way through that. But I'll point to the same thing that I pointed to before, and I think it's something that a lot of hitters are facing right now. It's that they didn't see a lot of live pitching before this season began, and I think that plays a part into it too. And Dave Roberts made a good point the other day that I hadn't considered, which is that because a lot of these starting pitchers are not fully stretched out to begin this season, hitters are not seeing a pitcher a third time in the same game. And usually when hitters see a pitcher a third time in the same game, they have a significant advantage. They're seeing a lot of people coming out of the bullpen, seeing guys just one time, and sometimes that throws guys off too. And I don't want to sound like this is just a litany of excuses for Cody Bellinger, but I just think...
I think they're fair points.
I just think there are a ton of reasons why hitters don't get off to great starts. But, I mean, I saw a play earlier where Cody Bellinger turned on an inside fastball from Chris Paddock and hit like a 100-plus mile-an-hour line drive to the right side, and Eric Hosmer made a diving catch. You know, that's an out. So he's really, really good. I got to think he's going to hit.
Alden Gonzalez, multimedia reporter for ESPN, joined the Sliwa Show. Alden, any updates on Corey Seager?
Yeah, he's back in the lineup today. He's a DH.
Look at that. I didn't even see it. I didn't even notice it.
Yeah, he got back in the lineup today, and actually Dave Roberts was surprised that he was back, and he said that he got back faster than he thought he would. Mm-hmm. Back injuries are always a cause of concern, especially a guy like Corey Seager who's been banged up recently. But Dave Roberts said that he could have played shortstop today, so he just put him in as DH as a precaution. So he seems to be fine, which for the Dodgers is a great sign, because Corey Seager got off to a really hot start this year, and it looked like he was starting to look like the player that he was a couple of years ago when he looked like one of the best young shortstops in the game. And I know that I remember last year he had a stretch where he looked like he was getting back into who he was, and then all of a sudden he had a hamstring injury and he missed a bunch of time, and that was really unfortunate. So, you know, hopefully for Corey, he could just sort of pick up right back to where he left off, because a lot of people forget this guy was an amazing player.
Alden Gonzalez, multimedia reporter for ESPN on the Sliwa Show. Alden, I want to stay real quick on Joe Kelly It was an 8-game suspension. It was reduced down to 5 games. I'm sure you heard his comments talking about the Houston Astros. Just your opinion, kind of take a little curveball here. Do you think the Astros, you think all season long this is just going to be how it is? They'll be targeted by teams. There's going to be this disrespect towards that franchise and those players. They'll never be respected. There might be podcasts that come out where if the question's brought up, players are going to be very critical. Is that the world that the Astros are living in? And frankly, I'm one to say that they deserve it. Just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think the second part is true, that they will be looked down upon by their peers, and they will not have proper respect from their peers. And I think that was clear throughout spring training, the first spring training, when everybody was mouthing off against them. I had never experienced players so openly criticizing other players to the media. It was because of what they did, and it was
and the repercussions,
their apologies immediately thereafter. The first part, though, about them being targeted, I don't think that's going to be the case, and I think Joe Kelly is a reason why. The reason why Joe Kelly's suspension was 8 games, and it's a lot. It's 22 games if you transfer 60. If you translate a 60-game season into 162, was for two reasons. Number one, because Major League Baseball wanted to send a message against people gathering and not social distancing, given the outbreaks we've seen on the Marlins and the Cardinals, and because Joe Kelly sort of prompted that, he got hit with that, but also because Rob Manfred said from the beginning that he was not going to tolerate pitchers throwing intentionally at Astros hitters because of the sign-stealing scandal. And I understand why a lot of people are openly critical of that too, because it's just sort of cruel irony that the team that committed one of the greatest, what is considered one of the greatest cheating scandals in baseball history, those players did not get punished, but pitchers who might retaliate against that are going to get punished. And that's been a sore subject for a lot of players, but that's a big reason also why Joe Kelly got hit with an 8-game suspension. They're not going to tolerate that, and I can tell you that every manager has had this conversation with their pitchers, with their players, that they will not be throwing at Astros hitters this season because this season is so precious, because there are so few games, and they just don't think it's worth it. So I don't think that's going to happen very often.
Alden, looking at baseball as a whole right now, would you call the regular season so far a success? I know we've had some positive tests. I know what's happened to the St. Louis Cardinals, what's happened to the Miami Marlins, the amount of games they've played in comparison to the Dodgers and so forth. They've played a fraction of the games. But being a third through and sort of thinking for a second, maybe they have some things under control. What are your thoughts so far of this regular season and all the question marks that came in to where we are right now and then some hiccups in the middle of it? What do you think of where we are?
Well, I would not call it a success. It has proven that Major League Baseball is going to continue on and plow through this season and do everything possible to get to the postseason, which is where all that revenue is going to come from that is going to be so important to owners this year. But no, like the Cardinals played, 5 games. They haven't played in more than 2 weeks. The Marlins have already gone through, I saw this recently, 45 players. They've used 45
wow.
players for their first 12 games. And it's just, I mean, we knew this from the beginning, but having it play out in front of our eyes has just been very eye-opening, just that how fragile this whole thing is. And when you're not doing a bubble environment like the NBA is, where, you know, we started off at the top talking about the NBA, I'm watching NBA games, and maybe it's flawed thinking, but I'm thinking that they're going to be able to pull this off. Like, it seems like it's going really well. The travel component makes it so difficult for baseball, and I understand why a bubble environment is more difficult for them, but it's not a success, it's not necessarily that I'm blaming baseball for it, because, you know, any little thing could have caused outbreaks like this, as we have seen. But when you have two teams that are going to end up not playing a legitimate season, and we're just sort of waiting for the shoe to drop for some other team, because
sure.
it could happen to literally anybody, no, it's been a mess. And you've had players opting out. And you had players on the Indians, two pitchers on the Indians who broke protocol and had to be quarantined away from the team. Like, again, it was always going to be difficult to get so many people, hundreds of people throughout the country, to buy in and basically act like a monk for 3 months. I get it. It was going to be really, really hard. But that's what it was going to take to have a season, and it's already been a mess, and it's early.
Alden, just for, we'll use St. Louis, Miami, any teams that have been, they've had their games postponed. Is the game plan with those teams, they're just doubling up? They'll just have double headers, X amount of double headers over the course of the rest of the season?
They're going to play as many double headers as possible. But, I mean, even I think Rob Manfred acknowledged this regarding the Cardinals, that there are simply not enough days to make up the amount of games it would take to play 60. It's just not fair. It wouldn't be fair to the Cardinals to play that many doubleheaders. So they'll play doubleheaders wherever they can. I think the Cardinals are going to play a doubleheader on Saturday against the White Sox, and then they might play another doubleheader against the Cubs later on in the following week to make up for a series that was postponed earlier. But the Cardinals are not going to be able to play 60 games. Like I could say that definitively, it's going to be really hard for even the Marlins to play 60 games. So and managers have talked about this, that you're just going to have to accept that. That at the end of the year, you're going to look at the standings and, you know, not everybody's going to have played a different amount of games. And you just hope that it's as close to 60 as possible. But, you know, again, I'll say it again, like the Marlins and the Cardinals have had to replace basically half their rosters with guys who were not in the major leagues and guys that were getting off the waiver wire. Like, that's just not, it's not really fair. But, you know, I guess you could blame them because it was their players and was their team that had the outbreak. So maybe that's just what you get. But it just shows you just how weird and just how unconventional this whole season is going to be.
Alden, a final one for you. Alden Gonzalez, multimedia reporter for ESPN. We've heard some of the conversation about potentially Major League Baseball going to a bubble concept for the postseason. And we'll just continue that theme. We talked about the NBA and how you feel right now. Hey, you do feel good if you're the NBA that you might have some success of pulling this thing off. Is that concept, the bubble concept, is that a conversation that's fluid? It's happening right now in Major League Baseball. Is it something that the Players Association is interested in as well? I mean, it sounds like it's going to be critical and important to finish off. If you get that far and you get this postseason, you got 16 teams in, now you have to really kind of control this thing. How realistic do you think this is?
I'm not sure about how realistic it is, but I know it is something that they're talking about. And I think, to me, it seems to make all the sense in the world because of what you mentioned and how bubble environments tend to work, and because Major League Baseball has demonstrated subtly and not so subtly that getting through the postseason and, again, cashing in on the broadcast revenue from it is crucial for them this year when every team is basically going to be hosting games without fans. I struggle, though, with the logistics of how they could make that work. I know Southern California has been talked about as just the ideal location for this, the obvious one, because within driving distance, you have Dodger Stadium, you have Angel Stadium, and you have Petco Park. That can work. I don't know how it works in terms of, like you saw with the NBA, I think this is right, that when they reported to that bubble environment in Orlando, they all had to quarantine for a certain number of days.
That's right.
Before they could start playing. Baseball's not going to be able to do that because the regular season ends September 27th. I think the playoffs start 2 days after that. So they'd have to do it without that quarantine. Is that going to lead to outbreaks? I don't know. I think it's in baseball's best interest to make that, to make the bubble environment work, especially because here in Southern California, all the stadiums are outdoors. And, you know, during COVID, like, that's a big thing. Get outdoors as often as possible. And obviously the weather would cooperate. There are some logistical things that they'd have to work out. And I'd be interested, one of the reasons, I don't think this is the main reason, but one of the reasons why they didn't do a bubble environment in, say, Arizona, like was talked about months ago, was because the players were against sort of quarantining away from their families for 3 months. But I would think that if it's only for 1 month tops and maybe only a couple of weeks, if you get bounced 1 week, whatever, that they would be in favor of it. And if they could work out the logistics of it, I think it makes all the sense in the world.
Alden, always appreciate it, man. Thank you for doing this. Always great insight. So I appreciate you being a part of the show. Okay, man?
No problem, man. Take care.
All right, that's Alden Gonzalez right there. Okay, final thoughts coming up next. Portland is in. Portland versus Memphis this Saturday. Portland will have to win one of two games to move on. Memphis will have to win two. I think it's safe to say Lakers will be playing the Portland Trail Blazers. Final thoughts coming up next. Sliwa Show, 710 ESPN.
The Sliwa Show continues on 710 ESPN. More Sliwa right now.
Man, thank you to Alden Gonzalez. Thank you to Bobby Marks on tonight's show. Thank you to Heather Dinich. We got what a great thing sometimes. You know, you get a chance to do these shows and just to talk to some of the people that Bobby Marks doesn't get any better on the ESPN front. Heather Dinich doesn't get any better from college football. And like I mentioned, Alden Gonzalez from a baseball perspective. Love listening to all these guys. And hopefully it's content that you guys want and you appreciate as well. So tonight was a crazy, crazy night. The whole time I'm talking to Alden, as far as the conversation, I got my left eye staring at the Portland Trailblazers and the Brooklyn Nets. What a freaking game. What a way to end the regular season for the NBA. 134 to 133, the final score. The Portland Trailblazers have found a way to be a part of this play-in this weekend. Unfortunately, I actually really feel bad for the Phoenix Suns, who went 8-0 in this bubble, and they will not get an opportunity to play Memphis, who went 2-6. Freaking Milwaukee. Milwaukee ruined our chances of Damian Lillard and Devin Booker for a Saturday-Sunday type of matchup or showdown. But it is what it is. It's the Portland Trailblazers behind 42 points, 12 assists from Damian Lillard, 13 of 22 from the field, 8 of 14 from the three-point line, 8 of 9 from the free throw line. What else do you want? Two steals on top of that. He carried them. Nurkic had 22, CJ McCollum had 25, Whiteside had 16, Gary Trent Jr. had 16. I'm not going to make this a Portland Trailblazers post-game show, but what it does mean for the Los Angeles Lakers, we are right there. That means we are this much closer to finding out who we're going to play this upcoming Tuesday, a 6 o'clock tip-off. Michael and myself will do the pregame show coming up at 4:30. Okay, last couple minutes of the show. I mentioned this a little bit earlier, and I've kind of hinted towards it. Obviously, you guys know all these promos that I've been running on 710 ESPN. We do have a new lineup. So starting on Monday, lineup changes. I don't have a show tomorrow. Tomorrow's Angels and Dodgers, so that game will be right here on 710 ESPN, so we'll be carrying that game. So what does that mean? That means tonight is my final Sliwa show. This will be the final Sliwa show that I got. Just a quick reminisce over the last 6 months. I cannot tell you guys how much I personally needed to do what I did over the last 6 months and kind of go through that grind and try and figure it out on my own for the most part of, how to put together a show. Definitely had some help in the background, but at the end of the day, I had never done daily shows. I've been doing Lakers Talk for 4 years. It's once a week. I had never done daily shows Monday through Friday, and because of COVID, that's what happened. I was, all of a sudden slotted in to go Monday through Friday. That was never really the game plan. Mason and Ireland doing crosstalk with them every single night. And for my own personal growth, it was incredibly, incredibly important. So I'm very appreciative of the station to have that challenge. And trust me, there were some challenging shows trying to figure it out. You know, when you do a solo show and you're not on with anybody else, I know I did some shows with Kirk Morrison. But when you do a solo show on yourself, and just the structure of what we had the last couple of months, think about it. We had no sports. So a lot of times I feel like, man, I'm just talking about the same thing. Is this interesting at all? So it's definitely been one of those things experience-wise from my own. I wouldn't take back one moment of it. So let's put it that way. Timing is everything. I have this incredible opportunity to do Lakers pregame and postgame show. And I'm going to embrace that like no tomorrow. Of course I am. That's basically what I got brought over to do. Obviously Lakers Talk on top of that. So the Lakers content is 4 or 5 days a week that I'm going to be behind a microphone. I get to talk Lakers basketball, which is what I'm by far most passionate about. But at the same time, when you start something like I did with the Sliwa Show, you feel like, man, where can this thing go? Wait a minute. I'm in the lineup, I'm on 5 days a week. and you're trying to figure all that out. But for at least now, for the near future, that will not be the case anymore. So Sliwa Show will end tonight. New lineup starts on Monday. In some ways, it's bittersweet. It's like you, when you're just starting to try to figure something out, you want to continue on it. But like I mentioned, I'm a firm believer that timing is everything. And for now, I got some fantastic opportunities coming up with the Lakers broadcast and the playoffs and Lakers talk and everything else. So you know I'm going to embrace that, and you know I'm going to obviously deliver as best as I can for 710 ESPN listeners, everybody on the ESPN app. So with all that being said, I want to thank listeners out there that spent the last 6 months on this show. We did great on the podcast as well. I'm always proud of that. That's when I know people are listening on the ESPN app and on iTunes, so I thank you for that as well. I'm making it sound like I'm gone. I'm not gone. I'll be back actually on the mic this upcoming Monday for Lakers Talk. But at least for now, Sliwa Show, that's it there. Thank you, LA. Thank you, everybody that tuned in. I greatly appreciate it. You guys have a rest of your night.